Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
I want some butts at that point.
On Sports Radio 810.
Top Gun and you buzz the tower. I want some butts, okay?
All right, welcome back here in the Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Josh Briscoe and Beards heading up until 2 o'clock. We'll talk with Craig Brown, some Royals baseball coming up at noon. Mick Schaefer will join us in the 1 o'clock hour. Learn, funniest, best, coming your way at 1 o'clock. I think the answer is definitely yes for two of the three. Successful season for all the local schools. K-State, by far and away. I mean, absolute successful season. I mean, just so many levels above what would be even hoped for. Like, best case scenario this year, I don't think it was Final Four.
No.
You know? Finishing, top four, 3-2 in the Big 12. I think best case scenario at the time, looking back, like even a year ago, it was get to the tournament. Can this team get to the tournament? What can they do in the Big 12? Let's see what Jerome Tang can do. Like, best case scenario, get to the tournament. And not only did they get to the tournament, they were a freaking 3 seed, and they were a possession or two away from heading to Houston and breaking the streak of them, you know, in 64 and going to a Final Four. That is just far and away the expectations that were exceeded for K-State. Mizzou, it's unfortunate how it ended. It's also not necessarily surprising how it ended because, as we've discussed, the issues that they have had throughout the season, some of their weaknesses were exposed in that game against Princeton. You pick a bad night to have a bad night. And we talk about that in the playoffs and certainly in the NCAA tournament. What did Andy Reid say after the Tampa Bay game? We picked the worst night to have our worst night, something along those lines, because they played like poo-poo in that Super Bowl. And Mizzou played like poo-poo against Princeton in that game. So it's a sour taste to what was a sweet season with Dennis Gates at the helm. And both of those schools, from the questions around them a year ago to where they are now, it's such solid footing and excitement and hope and confidence in what the future will be with the coaches at their particular spot. Missouri, successful season. No way of getting around that. Absolutely successful season. Advanced to the semifinals of the SEC tournament for the first time since they've been in the SEC. Picked to finish 10th. They finished, fourth? Whatever it was. Double bye. And they, win a game in the NCAA tournament. A game in which they were the underdogs going into that game. So, absolutely successful season. How do these teams build off of that? The issue now for Jerome Tang and Dennis Gates is that there are going to be expectations. It was a sit back and just see what happens type of season. There are now expectations for both of these coaches. What can you do now? How do you build off of this? Does the real work start when rebuilding the team again? When K-State, loses Noel and Johnson and Sills. Getting Tomlin and Massoud and Carter and Gasan back, and the expectations are they will return, but you never know. It's college basketball. And, some incoming guys and some guys they redshirted that were surprising that, you get a transfer from LSU and you redshirt them. Well, now you got a guy that's been in college basketball that practiced with the system for a year and is going to step in and, a 6'10", 200, whatever pound center. That's going to be added to the mix for K-State. Okay, and you add in, a couple of top 100 recruits. So, and then the transfer portal. What happens there? So there's solid footing. There's excitement moving forward with K-State. But Noel is bigger than just, you lost a player in Noel. You lost a guy that was sort of the heart and soul of this team, and you lost your leading scorer. So, with those guys, it's roughly 50 points, 20 rebounds, and 13 assists per game that have left. that you got to find a way to replace. Kansas did it a year ago after winning a national title, and they go back to being a one seed, unfortunately lose in the round of 32. Mizzou loses Hodge and Golston and Gomillion. There are questions about who will return for them. You know, Noah Carter can transfer, and Honor and East, those guys cannot transfer because they've already transferred twice, I believe. So, but Noah Carter can be a grad transfer. Mosley could be gone. Modiara, Aiden Shaw. The big question is whether or not Kobe Brown returns. And NIL makes a difference now. Because Kobe Brown, I think, 5 years ago, just simply goes pro and says, I'm ready to be a pro. If that's in the NBA or if that's Europe, I'm ready to make some money. I've been here for 4 years. I'm ready to go and get paid as a professional basketball player. And if I'm somewhere top 50, second round pick, okay, good money. If not, there's pretty good money overseas. NIL, stay one more year, continue to improve your draft stock. You don't just get to press the improve your draft stock button. I think that's such an easy cliche. Just return and improve your draft stock. Yeah, you're returning. You're also a year older to the NBA. You know, that's something that people don't, you know, put nearly enough stock in, is that Kobe Brown, the age he is now, you return one more year. Do you show that, you know, you've improved your overall game, but you're now also a year older going up against 19 and 20 year olds that are also in the draft, and you'd be, you know, 23 or whatever it might be. But NIL means that there's a chance to me that Kobe Brown comes back. And I would say Mizzou could probably find a way to get it done of what the, I mean, asking price seems like that's, it seems an odd way of talking about college basketball to say asking price, but that's legit. I mean, what's the asking price from Kobe Brown to Mizzou to say, here's what I would like to return? Probably test the NBA waters, but if I get this to return, I'll come back one more year. Is that 100? Is it 200? Is it 400 like Nigel Pack got for, you know, each year that he was at Miami? Is it 500 to say, you know what, how badly do you want me to return? And for Mizzou, how much would it mean? Would they be a preseason top 25 team if Kobe Brown returns? And they get Kobe Brown, Noah Carter, Nick Honor, Sean East. We'll see what Mosley ends up doing. But Modiara, you bring in the number three JUCO player in the country, a couple of top 100 players or top 120, one top 100 player and another top 120 player. Is that a preseason top 25 team? I don't know. I don't know what every other team's going to look like, right? But what's that worth to Missouri, the collective, Dennis Gates, and things like that? I'd say it's probably worth a pretty good penny, a pretty penny to have Kobe Brown return. We'll see what happens with that. But both of them are on solid footing. The real question is, Beards, was it a successful season for KU? A round of 32 loss. They won the best conference, regular season conference that people have talked about in decades. They won it almost by multiple games. They played in that conference championship game. And they lost a one-point game with Bill Self in the hospital.
I'd say so. I never had, like, super high hopes for this KU team going into the tournament just because I didn't think they had enough offense to do anything. But I'd say it was, on the scale of KU things, maybe not, like, the highest of obviously last year.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still, I'd say, good.
Yeah. I think from where I thought they would, or wondering where they would be, you lose so much. Okay, what's Jalen Wilson going to look like returning? What's KJ Adams going to look like stepping in for, you know, David? What's DeJuan Harris going to look like returning, you know, and taking even a bigger step forward? The transfers coming in, freshmen, things like that, what are they going to look like? And to win the conference, it's incredibly difficult. And it's nothing against Norm Roberts, it's just reality. If Bill Self is on the sideline, I think he makes a difference in a one-point game. I think a move here, a move there, a play, an inbounds play here or there, a quick adjustment on the fly. I mean, you can sit next to the guy all you want. But, you know, the person that sits next to the most brilliant man on earth can't just slide into that person's, you know, chair and say, now I'm going to do the exact same things because I was sitting next to him. It's not that easy to do. And Norm Roberts did what he could. And it is not a blame to say, well, Norm Roberts, it's his fault. No, there are a lot of things that happened in that game. Arkansas played a really good game. They played like trash. the 5 days later, whatever it was. But I'm going to guess that Bill Self makes a difference. And so maybe they lose in the Sweet 16 to UConn. And it's like, well, you lost to a four in the Sweet 16. You're the first team since Duke, first team in 7 years to win the title and go to the second week in the next year. And you lost like 90% of your scoring and your team. And you won the Big 12. Incredibly successful season. I think it was a success. Just looking from, you know, the bigger picture, I think it was because of all of the things that they needed to overcome. And I don't think you can't separate the loss and Bill Self not being there and act like those are sort of that it wouldn't have made a difference in that game. I think it absolutely would, and maybe they still lose to UConn, but I think they get by Arkansas.
I think for Kansas's actual standards, it's very hard for me to say that losing in the round of 32 is a successful season. Even it's very yeah. That is very postseason focused. That is neglecting the winning the Big 12 the way they did. But I also think it would be really unnecessary to call it a failure. So you end up somewhere in purgatory. This is a purgatory season for Kansas. They were better than you expected in the regular season. They won an incredible conference, and then their head coach wasn't there for their tournament run that was cut short. That is an excusable, understandable, good. It's a good season. I don't know. Realistically for Kansas, I think anything less, certainly less than a Sweet 16, and really maybe less than a Final Four, is probably hard for you to carry with you as, oh, what a win. Because the reason that this year was definitely successful for K-State and Mizzou is because of where their expectations started from, where they started from. Kansas State and Mizzou making decent tournament runs, Mizzou just getting a win, K-State being right on the doorstep of a Final Four, and not just as a way of being like, oh, you know, if they would have won a couple games. They were in the Elite Eight, 3 points from a Final Four berth. And even that, I know, is going to be unsatisfying to a lot of Mizzou and K-State fans, because even though K-State and Mizzou came into this season expecting, like, one McDonald's chicken nugget. And by the end, you realize, we got a whole rotisserie chicken, and you still have some meat on the bone, right? There's just, like, you go, oh, man, we could have actually taken this a little further. Mizzou got a good matchup with the 15. Oh, we left a little bit of meat on the bone. But, man, I am stuffed from how much good basketball we got this year. That's undeniably true for Mizzou and K-State. Even if you left a little meat on the bone, didn't get your best bite last. With KU, I could just see it being frustrating because you don't feel like you got to see your team at full strength down the stretch, but they gave you great basketball in the regular season, and they just had sort of an intangible, terribly unlucky reason that they weren't at full strength in the tournament. A lot of teams weren't. A lot of teams had players banged up, and K-State wasn't at full strength through the Elite Eight because Kante Johnson was in foul trouble and played 18 minutes. Weird stuff happens, but I think
Missouri
at the very
wasn't at full
least
strength because they didn't really bring the energy.
Mizzou really they got
Sorry,
they got no Mizzou got the wrong end of the deal because they were given the 15 seed. They would have been so locked in for Arizona.
I think so too.
I actually do kind of think that.
I think they would have probably brought more of the energy they did the week before against Tennessee. But really, you know, that's also gallows humor for me. And you know what? Joke your way through it.
Find a way to joke. Your team won a game,
exactly.
Jason. They won a tournament game.
First time in a decade, right? 12 years or whatever it's been since they've won a tournament game.
This was good basketball. This was a good season locally.
So I think in a vacuum for Kansas specifically, like in a vacuum, not a successful season. Because how many times have we talked about all of the Big 12 regular seasons they've won in a row? And it's like, well, yeah, but win a national. Yeah, but what's Bill Self doing in the tournament? Yeah, but he lost to Kentucky in the national championship game. And okay, you go to a Final Four, but, you know, cool. I'll exchange six of those regular seasons for a chance. I'll exchange all of those regular season titles for another national title. In a vacuum, yes, the season wouldn't be viewed as a success. If you go back in time to last year and Providence makes a few more shots down the stretch in the Sweet 16, Miami continues in the second half the amazing crazy shots they were making in the first half, like the fallaway hook shots and things like that. It wasn't exactly that, but it sort of felt like Miami, some of the shots they were hitting was like, oh, it's just not your night, KU. It's just one of those days where you're going to lose in the Elite Eight, and it's going to be, how did Miami come in here and hit 21 threes and a couple of them fadeaways and hands in the face, and one of them they may have punted over to a different player who then just punched it into the goal. Well, second half, that didn't continue, and Kansas just demolished them in the second half. So a play here that maybe even Creighton in the round of 32, that was a closer game, or at least the final score was a little bit closer. But Providence was the one that felt like more of on your way to the Final Four to survive in advance. If they lose to Providence last year in the Sweet 16 and then this happens, then yes, I would say not a successful season, whether Bill Self is on the sideline or not. You were a one seed. You lost in the round of 32 coming off a year in which you were a one seed and you lost in the Sweet 16. But they won the national title last year. And you lose so much of your team. And you're replacing them with new pieces. And Bill Self talked about at the Big 12 Media Day about that summer trying to get the guys just to like, you know, hey, new guys, you didn't win the national championship. You specifically didn't win the... In fact, most of the people that did are not sitting with you in this room right now as we're going through our team meetings, okay? This is a completely different team, a different season. And to put that together and then see what they ended up being as a one seed, and also with the perspective that through the season, didn't we talk about... I mean, people are talking about Kansas as a one seed. This just doesn't feel like a Kansas national championship type team. This doesn't feel like one. People are talking about Kansas Final Four, but this just doesn't feel like a what you would see as a Kansas Final Four team. So, with all of that being said, it'd be hard for me to look at and go, no, it wasn't a success for KU because they were one or two wins away from, you know, in the NCAA tournament from saying it was a success, especially when you lose by one in that game. If they lost to a 16 seed, yes, disappointing, terrible. But I also think if they were in the Midwest, they probably beat the winner of Maryland and Auburn. Because, again, it's not how the, you know, Midwest technically was, because it was Auburn and Iowa that Houston played. But again, I went around and reseeded everything, and based on the geography and all of the different principles, it would have been Maryland and Auburn in the first round of the 8-9 game that Kansas would have played the winner. Huh. But I think this has been one of the funnest college basketball seasons from the local perspective in a long time, with all three schools having something to take real pride in and excitement in, and even moving forward, that KU can lose all the players that they did and still be a one seed and win the Big 12. That, yes, they've got to do it again. I mean, Wilson and Grady Dick and McCullough are gone. Pettiford and Yesufu and Clements are gone.
All the bench.
Yeah.
Cam Martin is gone.
Well, is the bench gone, or, I mean, were they already sort of gone?
Well, the players on the bench aren't there anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's instead of it, a player sitting in the seat and not doing anything, it's just a seat that's empty, also not doing anything in the game.
You see the shirts K-State was wearing, you know, just with the 1-2 and then all the underscores because there were two players on the team when Drum Tang got there. KU is retroactively working towards that as a goal right now, it seems. Like, hey, we're going to go ahead and we're just going to rip this thing down. It's going to be like DeJuan Harris and then Uday, and then the rest of this roster might be different.
Yeah, and they've got, you know, what, two top 40 players, another player that's, you know, top 60 that are coming in. Transfer portal will be there. So, I mean, and you've got DeJuan Harris and KJ still returning, and Uday and Ejiofor. So you've got some big men.
We're up to four now. There you go. 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it's just like a game of hangman, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Like, all right, we got another shooter, guard, wing? What are we doing here?
But a year ago at this time, we were discussing the same thing. Like, well, is Jalen Wilson going to return? He probably should, but what about some of these other? If Jalen Wilson returns, and then you got Wilson and Harris and KJ Adams, like, what and after that?
Are you going to get a superstar to any of those guys? Oh, Jalen Wilson. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. You know what? Apparently, KU can do
that.
Can
Jalen Wilson be the alpha dog on this team? Can he go from being like the third or fourth option to then saying, you know what, I'm the guy? Yeah, he absolutely can. And next year, with, you know, the local teams, all three of them, at least, depending on, again, I think Kobe Brown's a big one. If Kobe Brown returns to Missouri, because I don't see any reason why Tomlin or Massoud or Carter or Gasson would transfer, right? That wouldn't, I don't know what's going through people's minds. You know, it just, personally, it wouldn't make sense that would be the case. Maybe Massoud says, I'm ready to go pro, you know, in Europe. Or maybe he transfers to a school in New York. Maybe he transfers to St. John's and says, I want to be, I'm not with Marquise Noel anymore, my best friend from New York. He's gone. I'm going to transfer to St. John's and be a part
of Rick Pitino's team.
Yes, with Rick Pitino, and I get to play all of my home games in Madison Square Garden. Yeah. So I get to do that. Maybe that's something on Masood's mind, but it would be a surprise if those four if one of those four guys were not there at in Manhattan next year.
Meanwhile, are we ready to talk ourselves into, well, could DeJuan Harris take another step? Because I'm already talking myself into it. He's got 47 more years of eligibility. I just looked it up. So
he does.
He's been that Perry Ellis track.
Drew Timmy, shockingly, has two more years of eligibility.
It's incredible. Yeah, he's been on my screen. I've had either him or a Hansbro on my screen for the last 25 years. I can't tell the difference anymore.
I'm told
the mustache is helpful.
Yeah, Drew Timmy is actually signing a lifetime contract with Gonzaga.
Good, as he should. As he should. I don't want to watch Gonzaga basketball without that mustache in the middle.
I love that. Adam Morrison for Gonzaga, that the pictures of him when he played with the facial hair and the long hair and looking like he, you know, may have just woke up from, you know, sleeping in a box the night before under an overpass, and then cleaned up Adam Morrison, who's doing like the color commentary of Gonzaga Radio Network. It's like, he actually looks younger now than he did when he played. He's very cleaned up. Who is that guy? Who is that professional Adam Morrison?
He looks like what I assume Steven Adams would look like if he went clean shaven.
Yeah.
And not, I mean, he's not as jacked as Steven Adams because, you know.
Like 10 years younger Steven Adams if he was clean shaven is like looks like Adam Morrison.
Or just Adam Morrison 10 years ago, which makes him, you're right. I mean, there is a complete breaking of the fabric of space-time continuum with
Adam
Morrison.
How old do you think Steven Adams is?
34.
I think that's pretty close, but I'll take the under. I think we've played this game before.
I think it's actually the under.
He's 29.
Yeah.
Get the hell out!
As soon as I said 34, I'm like, I should have gone 29. I bet he's in his 20s, which is the reason why you would ask
that
question.
He's 9 years younger than Adam Morrison!
Well, now that is not true.
Adam Morrison's 38?
Also not true. He was 38 when he played at Gonzaga.
Yeah, and now he's 28 again.
He's now 25. Now that he's cleaned up.
Holy bleep.
Yeah.
Steven Adams is 29?
I really thought...
And he's like the smallest of his siblings.
Is he really?
He's got some siblings that are large. Josh and I played this game last week.
So also an odd Adams family.
Very much so. Yes. Yeah, but they are all the thing. Instead of just thing, they're like rock thing.
Yeah,
that was really a clarification in case Renee was listening, just because I don't want her to think that I've forgotten. That would be a relationship ender.
I see. Yeah, there's also a tweet that went out of Dennis Gates at Mizzou, right?
Oh yeah, there is transfer news, and then I lost it. But we're just gonna let Tweet Deck catch itself up here real quick,
yeah,
and then
catch
I'll
real quick while you're doing that. Here's the Steven Adams thing. His dad. He served in the Royal Navy, had 18 children with 5 women. His dad is 6'11", the average height of his brothers is 6'9", while his sister's average is 6 foot.
Give me the very beginning of that box score one more time.
Which part?
The very first thing you said, I think, about his dad.
His dad, 6'11", served in the Royal Navy, had 18 children with 5 women.
That was the one. Meanwhile, Colorado State transfer guard John Tonji is on campus, and Mizzou has secured a commitment here per multiple reports, including Dennis Gates just tweeting out the Dennis Gates punching air picture that he uses to say that something has been brewing.
Mm-hmm.
So landing the transfer guard out of Colorado State, John Tonji.
Colorado State.
I'm assuming that is how it's pronounced. I didn't catch as much Colorado State basketball this year as I usually do.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
My league pass wasn't working.
John Tonji from Omaha, senior at Colorado State, played all 4 years there. 6'5", 210, senior. Pretty good run for him. The points over his final 15-20 games, 17, 20, 24, 7, 25, 18, 10, 16, 21, 20, 17. It's pretty good. Pretty good. And a pretty good three-point shooter as well. So 37% from three for John Tonji?
That's a good question. Could that be a soft J? Totally possible.
Yeah. Maybe it's Hone Tonji.
Damn it.
So a 6'5", 210 senior guard for Mizzou that can shoot the rock. So there you go. Dennis Gates excited about it with the big fist pump picture that he tweets out when there's when he's sending out the bat signal. Which, by the way, I don't know that. I think Mizzou was at the scholarship limit with their incoming players and some of the players that were there. So probably an expectation that a couple players would transfer because, you know, that's college basketball. So, yes, probably the expectation there. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. To foul, to call the foul or not call the foul? That is the question.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
But real quick, I want to make it even worse, just for a brief second.
Excellent
story of your life.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson, Josh Briscoe, and Beards heading up until 2 o'clock. We'll talk some Royals baseball with Craig Brown into the Fountains. IntoTheFountains.substack.com. We'll also hang out with Mick Schaefer, 1 o'clock, KSHB 41 Sports Director. We got Learn Funniest Best coming our way today as well. 913-912-4810 is the text line to be a part of the show. Talking about the Colorado State transfer. Text says, however Jason wants to pronounce it, it is wrong.
That's a great point. Sorry. I couldn't find a pronunciation guide on the Colorado State website. Sometimes they have it, you know, with a player page and everything, and I think that's the way to do it. We just we let you pick away, and then I'm going to just say it a different way, and I bet we'll be all right.
Yeah, so what, John Tomji? So
should
it
make him Jom?
It is not John Tomji, or Tanji, or whatever. How do you spell his last name? Is it Ton or Ton? I don't have the page in front of me anymore. I deleted it.
Don Quixote is committed to Missouri.
There we go. It's pronounced Devon Dotson.
There it is.
This whole time, wow. Right in front of our face, Devon Dotson from Colorado State is transferring to Mizzou.
He's studying real estate and business.
John Tanji?
John Tanji, yes.
John Tanji. Okay, so it is definitely not pronounced John Tanji.
Not to be confused with John Shambi, who's a totally different person.
That's right. What if John Tanji's nickname is Boog?
Be really confusing.
It would be totally confusing. All right, so a little over a second to play. Darian Tremola is driving to the basket for San Diego State. Nimhard is guarding him. He rises for a little floater in the lane. Nimhard trying to get back into defensive position. Jumps, reaching with his right arm, but his left arm on the hip of Trammell. And Trammell losing his balance, the ball flutters towards the goal, isn't really close, misses. Creighton celebrates. Everybody thinks it's going into overtime, that Creighton came back and somehow forced an extra 5 minutes. But a foul was called. A foul was called. You good with it, Josh?
In real time, without any real investment, I hated it. I didn't say it was a bad call, but I hated it because it is such an unfulfilling way for a Final Four berth to be basically locked in. Also, it's probably getting called the other 58 minutes and 50-some seconds. Or sorry, too many minutes. 39 minutes and however many seconds. I was going back to football mode already.
Damn.
I'm thinking about the Super Bowl again.
How many overtimes do they play?
If you couldn't tell, I'm already thinking about my Super Bowl connections here.
Creighton...
We are in overtime.
San Diego State, fourth overtime.
Four here, I think.
Syracuse, UConn, or Georgetown, sir?
It's games, teams, times. Who can say? What I can say is at the end of the game, I just want to make sure I'm seeing black and white stripes. But that is what is so frustrating. If that shot goes in, could not matter less if it's an and one, right? Don't care anymore. If there's no contact and that's a bad whistle that gets blown, it is the worst thing of all time. Once the replay started coming through, I went, that's probably fine. Mm-hmm. But I do think, much like I tried to extend this to the non-affiliated Super Bowl watchers during Chiefs-Eagles, it's just kind of a sour note to end an awesome game on. I understand that. It's also still their job to make sure that you can't, you know, hook a guy in either game. In this case, you can't hook a guy to keep him from doing the thing he's trying to do, because that is, in both cases, a penalty, a foul.
Should have trusted my first instinct. It was Syracuse-UConn. I don't know why Syracuse-UConn. No, Georgetown. No, it was UConn. With the 18 overtimes, I think, exactly what it was. I'm right about that.
If it was Gonzaga, Drew Timmy would have been there. So
that's right. I know Johnny Flynn was. I think it was the right call. In real time, my wife and I are watching, and in real time, I'm like, that's a foul. That's a foul. You can tell, like, he, you know, uses his forearm. And the point of calling fouls in college basketball is, did someone gain an advantage by doing something that was outside of the rules? And Nimhard was beat to the basket and was trying to recover. And by trying to recover, he needed to jump and he needed to use the hip of Trammell to help him get a little higher. That's a foul. It is absolutely a foul, whether it's 1 second left or 45 seconds left. I don't think it would have been a controversy if there was 45 seconds left to go in the game. And that same foul call is called. I don't think people would have been complaining and going, you can't make that call there, or even the point that we got into with the Chiefs and Eagles. It was the same argument. Chiefs and Eagles, it was, well, yes, it was a hold, but were they calling that all game? Well, they weren't calling it all game, but then they decided to call it then. I saw a lot of that last night. Mm-hmm. Some from Chiefs fans, too, which was a little surprising. That it was, well, they've been letting them play, and they haven't called that all night, and then they call it there. Well, I mean, can we go through every single play throughout the game and say for a fact that that exact guy in the air that might be shoved by a forearm was not called, that they were allowing him just to push around and things like that? Yes, it was a lower scoring game, and yes, it was more physical, and yes, the referees were letting him play, and I use letting him play in air quotes, because if a foul occurs and a referee is blocked by somebody that's in front of them and they don't see it, they're not going to call it because we saw it from 20 feet in the air,
right,
looking down on it. That was a clear view by that official right there. There was nobody obstructing his view. He could see it clear as day. The elbow goes into the, or the arm slash, you know, forearm goes into his hip, and it's a foul, and you got to call it. And I would much rather them make that call there than just swallowing their whistle, because the whole, the officials shouldn't decide the game. Those that have that opinion are missing the irony of their opinion on that. The official not calling the foul there, even though he thinks it's a foul, to quote, swallow his whistle, is doing way more to help decide the game than actually officiating it the way he feels like it should be officiated. That was a foul. I'm calling the foul. But to go, it's 10 seconds. I can't call that foul. Well, he punched him in the face. Well, there's 10 seconds left. Well, if he punches him in the face, can you call that? If you can't call it at that time, I need to know when you can call it. I need to know what point in a basketball game are you then allowed to call a foul? Is it 25 seconds left? Is it 10 seconds? Is it enough time to where the other team can then set up a play if you call a foul? Is it not okay if the other team doesn't then get a shot? Because people were saying, well, the Eagles should have got a shot to get the ball back. Okay, so if that holding call was called earlier in that possession, and then they still had to kick it back to the Eagles with 45 seconds left to go and, you know, up by three or whatever, was the holding call okay at that point because the Eagles then got the ball back? I think a lot of it is annoyance with that's how the game ended. And the timing sucks. It sucks that it was, you know, with 1.2 seconds left and not 35 seconds left or 4 minutes to play. Because that's the way we remember that ending of that game, which wasn't necessarily a well-played game. Some of that is officiating and letting them sort of fight and struggle and things like that. The question would be, that I would have, is were they, quote, letting them play, or were there some fouls that looked like it was a little more physical that the official didn't see? Was he in the right spot? Then that's certainly a question.
Yeah.
Because that was clear as day for him to be able to see. And I don't really, I'm never going to be on the side of, well, yes, I agree it was a foul, but can you call it then? So you're agreeing it was a foul. You're agreeing it was a holding call on Juju, and you're agreeing that Nembhard displaced the shooter when he was in the air, and it affected the shot.
So tell me if this lands for you, because I think one thing that most sports fans are universally just like rooting for the same thing on is that we do not want to just simply see referees on our screen in the big moments, right? Mm-hmm. No one's at home wearing a ref jersey. It is more fun to watch your team lose to the other team than it is to watch your team lose where the referee's the one telling you like the final call in that game, and the clip that Beards had for the intro is, "They've decided it's over," or something along those lines.
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, that just sucks the moon out of the sky, right? What a horrible punctuation for a game. A little review, and then you say, hey, you know what, the time was all actually wonky, and so the game's just over now. But we would never tell an umpire, hey, two outs, let's say it's a 2-2 count. This ball, oh man, that was right on the corner, but I'd love to see one more pitch. I wish you'd go ahead and just call that a ball. Why don't you give us a full count here and just let us see one more pitch between these two just in this duel right now? Because in baseball, you have to have the umpire. You have to have someone every single pitch. You are looking to, they are making a call every single moment of that game, where the best parts of basketball is when you forget that there are refs on the court, because it is just running up and down the court. It is hitting a bucket. And like Michigan State, I loved watching Michigan State, K-State, because of that tempo that both teams were pushing with. That's when the game is in its most beautiful state for football as well. I don't need to remember that refs are there other than to blow the play dead and keep it moving. And whenever it becomes a spotlight moment for a referee, it just, again, it is antithetical to the parts of sports that we all rally around. No one watches sports for the great eye or to really nitpick the referees. That is it is really a necessary evil. It's maybe a little bit strong to all the refs in the audience. But I think it's interesting that it's when that is when that rule keeper, whoever it may be across sports, when they are in the spotlight, that is when we get annoyed, because none of us are watching sports for that reason. I think that's a very human instinct.
Agreed.
But consistency is important. Rule enforcement is important. The games are built on it. But man, it's so frustrating when you just want to see if that shot lands or not.
If we're going to go about, you know, refs can't decide the game and swallow the whistle, and you can't make that call, that was a foul, but you can't call it in that situation, well then, let me be the defense at the end of the game every time.
Right, sure.
Because what you're saying is the defense is going to have an advantage there, because the defense can play more physical and outside the construct of the rules and the way that it's supposed to be played, because you don't want the officials to call, to make a call and to blow the whistle. So great, I can push and pull, and I can, you know, elbow guys, and I can nudge them here, and I can, you know, bump them there, because, you know, hey, they're not going to call a foul. I can, you know, push them while I'm going for a rebound and no holds bar and all that stuff. You know, because
I think people like the idea of, well, just don't call the ticky-tack stuff. Just call the obvious stuff. But then that is yet another line. I find myself in that department with basketball more often than anywhere else. I would rather more stuff be allowed to be let go in basketball, if we're talking like retweaking some of the rules. Mm-hmm. But there's just a set of rules right now, guys. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, and one of the things that is difficult that I find myself and in this case could be talking out of both sides of my mouth, could be coming off as hypocritical, is in a baseball game, when an umpire has a specific strike zone, mm-hmm. and there's the outside part of the plate that's been called like a
good
ball.
Point. Yep.
And all of a sudden in the ninth inning, it's called a strike. To me, and maybe I'm just trying to, because this is how my mind works, maybe I'm just trying to make myself feel better that there is this hypocrisy there.
Sure.
I feel like it's more quantifiable when you can see the box and you can go back and see the umpire where the balls and the strikes were. And if you see the entire game, this is all blue, 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 blue. And then the ninth inning, that's a red.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier than to go, well, that wasn't called all night in a basketball game.
Right.
Really? You know for a fact that every time somebody jumped, if they were nudged, they didn't call that? Or can we go back and find some fouls where somebody had an elbow into their side and they did call that foul? It was just with 12 minutes to play in the first quarter and we don't remember it. So maybe it's just me trying to justify the sort of different mindset there.
Baseball's different.
Because there's such an easier way with the pitch tracks of saying, well, this pitch came in here and that part of the plate, or he's been given like a half inch on the outside, it's been a strike all night, and it's all red there, and then it's a ball, and you just walked the guy on a 3-2 pitch and you lost.
Strike zones are different, because if you were saying, hey, he called him game safe on a bang bang play at first three times, and this time you're giving that an out. We would never do that. It would always be to the monitor. What's the call?
Yep,
we've accepted that the home plate umpire is a third team in every game because he is setting some amount of what the rules are in real time.
Well, safe and out is pretty objective.
It's pretty binary. Yes.
Yeah. The foul or what's egregious enough to call a foul? What do we let go? That's so subjective.
Right.
Stepping on the line or not going to the monitor. His foot's on the line. Two or three, foot's on the line. Those are objective calls. Was it enough to displace the guy who was shooting the ball? Was it a foul? Did it affect the play? Did Nembhard gain an advantage defensively by putting his arm there when he was beat? If you say let the players decide the play, well then didn't Trammell decide the play by beating Nembhard to the lane?
I think that's the best argument, by the way. Like for fans trying for some soothing.
Yeah.
The players did decide it. He got him out of position, so the other guy fouled.
Yeah.
That's a win for that player. It's a win for Juju, et cetera.
He's trying to work back in. And that same thing with Juju, isn't it? Didn't Juju decide the game by beating him on that play? And Bradbury then, knowing he was beat, and even saying, I held him, I was hoping they would let it go. Maybe because they had let it go at different times in the game. But it's an odd opinion of, well, the refs missed that call earlier, so they should then purposefully miss this call at that time. Because they remember the calls they made. There's three officials on the floor. So maybe that official didn't miss the call that you're saying was let go earlier. He might have been on the outside, and there was an official underneath the basket that let that play go. Well, then this official now has a clear spot, is different than that one, and says, well, that's a foul. I'm calling it. Well, you guys haven't called that all night. Well, show me the times where there's been a foul where I didn't call that. So you've got three guys that are there that all have their view, their eyes are working, they're training,
their literal and metaphorical perspectives.
Yes.
Different than one ump. Also, again, one guy who's telling you something the whole game.
Yeah, that one ump has been the guy that's been calling the balls and strikes the entire game. And it would be specifically, no, he's the one that missed that particular call. If there was a pitch tracks for college basketball and foul calls, which would be quite the technological advancement.
Yeah.
If there was a way to do that, the amount of pressure that was put on a player and all of that stuff.
Somebody else should work on that.
Yeah, they should totally do that. It'd be great. We'd be able to help decide some of these arguments here. But I will always be of the mindset that it doesn't matter at what point in the game, 1 second to go or 59, or excuse me, now I'm in football.
I'd see.
39 minutes left to play in the game, 1 minute into the game, and it's a foul. It's a foul. Call it a foul.
I've always got football brain, by the way. It's why I can't wait to see what the Royals do all 60 minutes. Damn it!
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Appreciate the phone call, man. 267.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We'll talk some Major League Baseball, some Royals baseball with Craig Brown. A couple of texts, 913-912-4810. Text says the only problem is that is not how they called the whole game. Text says, what you're missing, referees have to be consistent. If you're not calling those things in the beginning, like in the Super Bowl, the players are adjusting to how you're calling the game, and then all of a sudden you want to call a penalty like that. I think it's unfair. The refs have to be consistent. Another question would be, did Nembhard throw his elbow into Trammell because he was like, we've been able to do this all game, so I'm going to go ahead and do this while he's in the air? Like, did Creighton adjust their game because the officials had, quote-unquote, called it or let them play a little more, at least in the eyes of the fans that they had let them play? I don't know. Craig Brown coming up next.